Coming up next, I'm going to reveal 7 career decisions that if you make, you will regret. And then Target is upping the ante on their minimum wage. I'll tell you what it is. And of course, we're going to take your calls, and it gets going right now. All right, folks, helping you win at work and in life. This is the Ken Coleman Show. That's it. What are we doing there? I want you to make more money, and I want you to experience more meaning. I want to raise your income, help you raise it, and I want to help you raise your impact. This is where purpose comes alive. And work is a whole different ballgame, and there is no stopping you. 844-747-2577. Okay, let's get right to it. 7 decisions that will create regret. I'm just going to tell you. Now, there's probably 70, but I'm just going to boil these down because these are ones that I hear from you on the show. I see it in social media. I read the data. Here we go. Before we break down the 7, Carl Palmer, I hope that's how you say it, a gerontologist at Cornell University, and his team interviewed 1,500 people for a study over the age of 65 about what haunts them most. Look for the word regret here. What do they regret most about their life choices? Now, this is a life question. However, not taking enough professional risk or career chances was number 7. Higher on their list of regrets than not taking enough care of their body. So it's a life question. Now you think for one second, I want you to really grasp the heaviness of this. Of all of the things that people over the age of 65 could reflect on and say, I wish I had done this. I wish I had done this. I mean, there's a lot of things. Think of just of all the relational things. The experiential things. Work, a work-related regret. Number 7. Let me just call this out. A lot of new people to the show coming in and out. Some of you are going, all right, let me see if that. Do I really believe there's purpose in work? Is this just another motivational bunch of gibberish? No, even if you don't realize it, you long to make a difference in this world. I think you know that. But I think a lot of people don't believe that there's a way to make a really unique difference through your work besides a paycheck that would allow you to do great things for your family and your friends. So here are 7 decisions, if you will, choices that will cause regret for you as it relates to your professional life. 1 is pursuing just the paycheck, just the bigger paycheck. We get calls all the time on the show. Ken, I took a promotion. I need help because I'm 6 weeks in and I know it's not right. Why? Well, there's a whole host of mistakes that were made, but the driving force behind those type of scenarios is that they didn't pursue purpose. They didn't pursue passion, work that they love. They didn't pursue mission, results that they want to produce in the world. They just went, I'm good at this. They want me. They like me. I want more money. Woo! And that wears off. We humans adapt just like that. And the paycheck will wear off. I will tell you this. First time I've said this on the show. I'm anxious to see what happens when the great resignation finally kind of comes to, you know, we see kind of normal moves every month, but not this unbelievable migration of people just leaving. I'm very anxious to see how many people make even more moves because they chased a bigger paycheck. More on that later. Target, up in the ante big time. Talk about that next segment. Target's an example. Target is offering another unbelievable carrot, and people will chase that carrot. That's the first biggie. Don't pursue the bigger paycheck. Pursue bigger meaning. 2nd regret or mistake, settling. I'm just going to simplify that. Settling for a okay job. Settling for an average culture. settling for a safe career path. This is what Theodore Roosevelt talked about in his famous Man in the Arena speech, those cold and timid souls who know neither victory or defeat. They just kind of ride along. Number three, not fighting for what you believe in. Now, let me just dial that down a little bit. Not standing up when wrong is done in front of you in the workplace. Not standing up for your principles and making a decision that you know is right, but could be scary. That leads to number four. Quieting your principles. Quieting your principles. Meaning, I don't like it. Doesn't feel right. I'm going to change my principles. I'm going to shift my thinking in order to be able to live with what I see happening. Let me personalize this a little bit more. What I'm talking about here is if you are being mistreated by a leader, instead of going, you know what, that's not right, I don't believe I should be treated that way by my leader or my coworkers, and doing something about it, this is you going, well, maybe I'm just a little too sensitive. Maybe I'm this, and this. And you allow yourself to put up with garbage and your soul dies a little bit each day. Number five, not learning from your mistakes and your poor decisions. Let me delineate. Mistake is I'm walking down the hall. I'm looking at my phone instead of paying attention in the hallway. I glance up just in time to almost completely run over somebody, but I knocked their coffee over. This is a mistake. You know, this is like, oh, I that was a mistake. A bad decision is to do something unethical, to cheat your company, to berate or belittle somebody, whatever it is. There's a difference between a premeditated bad decision. You're going, you know what? I don't feel good about this. I'm going to whatever. Versus I wasn't thinking, I really wasn't paying attention. This is a mistake. But we've got to learn from these things. I can't tell you how many adults never get to the point where they go, I've got to learn from it. I can't just be aware of it and own it. Like, owning the mistake is, yeah, I did that. But not to actually learn something from it, a poor decision where you went to work for a company you know now you shouldn't have gone to work for. What do you learn from this? Or just going, I acknowledge I shouldn't have went to work for this company. I'm going to go, well, let's spin the wheel and see what I can find next. No, what do we learn from it? That leads into the sixth one, where you break trust with your peers at the office. You've made a poor decision or maybe a mistake, but you don't learn from it to the point that you then not just own it, but change it and correct it. Then people start to just distrust you. But you're an unhealthy person that I don't want to be around them. They're not willing to change. Coming up next, the seventh decision. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. All right, last segment, we were talking about seven career decisions that if you make these, you will regret them. And boy, I love the old holdover. So what's the seventh one? Let's quick review. Number one, pursuing a bigger paycheck, not bigger meaning. Number two, settling for things average, below average, settling, not pursuing. I'm just going to settle for this. There's no sense in trying to do anything better, be anything better. Number four, not fighting for what you believe in. Four, changing the way you believe just because you want to go along to get along. Number five, not taking ownership for your mistakes and poor decisions. And then six, breaking trust with your peers. That leads to seven, and I think the most fatal career-killing decision that there is. is making decisions based on fear. Deciding to do something or not to do something based solely on fear. It sidelines so many beautiful dreams. It brings to a halt so much opportunity. Making a decision or not making a decision based solely on fear. Now, hear what I'm saying. Fear can protect us and fear can paralyze us. I'm saying just the fear, unchallenged fear. Decisions that are made or decisions that are not made based solely on fear, and we don't check into it and say, is fear telling me the truth here? Is it in fact protecting me from something? Or is fear lying to me and holding me back? But here's what the natural reaction to fear is for humans. Oh, warning sign. And we retreat as opposed to going, wait a second, how long has that been going? Just curious in the control booth. Just a quick poll. I won't make you speak on the mic. If you speed up when you see a yellow light, raise your hand. Oh, if you slow down when you see a yellow light, raise your hand. I think Nathan's abstaining from the vote. And Nathan's busy directing, which I understand and I appreciate. You are allowed in it. By the way, abstaining from a vote is an actual recorded vote in Congress. I had somebody get mad at me one time because I didn't vote in a certain election. I'm not going to get into that right now. Like, I can't believe you, of all people, Coleman, you voted every election. I said, hey, abstaining because I don't like the options is an actual vote. Just there's a little extra civics 101 because I'm a man of the people and I like to teach you folks stuff. There you go. Don't let fear paralyze you. Allow fear to protect you, but the only way we know is if we dive into it. I'm the guy who speeds up at the yellow light because I'm like, hey, there's time for some more getting. If I see a warning sign, this drives Stacy nuts. All right? This is full disclosure. Joe is laughing because he knows me very well on this. I'll drive up in Leaper's Fork. There's a particular road near where I live where we get heavy rain and they close the road. Sometimes in anticipation of the rain, sometimes because it's flooded. But I've noticed folks and my team here in the control room, many times they forget to take the sign down or they're really slow in doing it. Do you know how I know this? Anybody want to take a guess how I know? Because I challenged the process. Many times I have pulled up to it, moved the sign, and driven the 50 to 75 yards around the corner to see has the water receded. And I have realized that many times it has. I'm a guy who goes, wait a second. Is there anything really to be afraid of behind there or not? This is how I'm wired. I'm going to challenge the process. Oh, Ken, be careful. Really? Do I have to be careful? Or do you think I need to be careful? Because there's a big difference between whether or not you think I need to be careful and whether or not I think I need to be careful. This is how I'm wired. Not everybody's wired that way, but I'm teaching from a place that is a natural condition for me to go, okay, I'm not saying I'm going to completely drive through it, Alex, but you better dang well guarantee I'm going to see if the water's there. Now, if the water's there, I'm not going to drive through in my little sedan. But if it's not there, you know what I'm doing? I'm moving the freaking sign, baby, and I don't care what Sheriff Rusty thinks. Because if Sheriff Rusty comes up to me and says, Mr. Coleman, why did you go through there? Because, Rusty, you or the Leaper's Fork Department of Transportation didn't get out fast enough and move the freaking sign. I got somewhere to be. And this is the quickest way to get there. So here's my point in this whole silly explanation and metaphor. Alex, there's a point here. And the point is, dig into the fear. Before we make a decision based on fear, or we don't make a decision based on fear, have enough guts to examine the fear. And again, if the fear is protecting you, you're really smart and wise. If the fear is holding you back, you're really smart and you're really wise. This is the point. All right, good stuff. Okay, we got fresh headlines. Let's get to it. We call it In the News. All right, let's see here. We got a little CBS News headline and Fox Business. Target raises its minimum wage to as much as $24 an hour. Workers at Target stores and distribution centers in places like New York, where competition for finding and hiring staff is the fiercest, they could see starting wages as high as $24 an hour. This is important because this is going to be regional. And again, this is what I was talking about earlier. Chasing the paycheck is a temporal thing. And a lot of companies are throwing out a higher paycheck just to get eyeballs. It's like clicks. They got to hire and it's very competitive. So in places like New York, you could see a $24 an hour minimum wage. Can we pause for a second? Thank you all very much. Can I teach some economics 101 that politicians won't tell you? When wages and salaries increase, companies' expenses increase. They're in business, not charity. They will find a way to pass it on to you. So, Alex, I told Stacey about this story last night. We had a quiet moment with no teenagers. And I said, oh, by the way, I'm talking about this tomorrow. I said, it's 25. She loves Target. She calls it Target. A lot of women love Target, man. And I said, can you believe this? She goes, oh, my gosh. I go, yeah, be careful at Target, would you please? Because she loves to go to Target. Well, guess what? They're going to pass that on to Stacy. So your little loofah or whatever they buy that was $8 is now going to be $12. I'm just keeping it real. This is economics 101. Man, inflation. Okay. Inflation isn't some magical thing that just happens. All right. Anyway, so there you go. Minneapolis-based retailer said they'll adopt minimum wages from 15 to 24 an hour. So here's my point. That's going to change by region, and it's all a carrot. And then one other quick headline, small businesses still struggling financially, Fed survey finds. They are struggling financially, small businesses, because supply chain challenges and working challenges, workers. Small businesses having a hard time competing with the Targets of the world. Mom and pop store can't pay $24 an hour. And then you take supply chain issues on top of that. There's inventory issues, cost issues, competition issues, talent issues. Can I make a quick prediction on this? I believe we're going to see a reset in the next 6 months in several areas. I think foreclosures, bankruptcies are going to go up. That's going to cool the housing market in some ways. It's going to slow some things down. It's going to also reset some of this job market. Some will survive, some will not. It's going to be very interesting. Hang on. Don't get panicked. Don't make any dumb moves. Step into your fear. I'll be here for you if you need to call. All right, speaking of, coming up next, we take your calls. This is the Ken Coleman Show. All right, folks, helping you make more money and experience more meaning. That's what we do. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Here to help you win at work so you're winning at life because they are tied together. It's pretty amazing. We are living in a world where you can do any number of things all with one click of a button. My new favorite thing, by the way, with one click, my golf app. I can book a tee time, one click. It's very nice. What can you do with one click? Lots of things. But you know what you really can do with one click is change your professional future. One click, finding a job that takes you from paycheck to purpose by visiting my friends at ZipRecruiter. Sign up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. ZipRecruiter can work for you. ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. By the way, it's free. ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. All right, to the phones we go. Morgan joins us in Kansas City, Missouri. Morgan, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hi, Ken. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You bet. What's up?
Well, basically, my head and my heart are at odds, and I've heard you tell, 100 people to follow their heart, but my head thinks my heart is really dumb.
Say that again.
My head thinks my heart is really, really dumb.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty normal.
So here's my situation. I have a job that I love for a company that I love, but about coming up on 2 years ago, my husband and I welcomed our first child.
Yay.
And as you know, that kind of changes everything.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, my husband and I are farm kids, and now here we are in the city, and we realize we would love to raise our children the way that we grew up.
Yeah.
And I'm from a really close-knit family, but they live really far away, and our child is the only grandkid.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be really great to move toward my family.
Okay.
For that reason. So there's a job open in that area, but I don't know that I would love it. Do I apply for a job that would just be kind of, okay,
no,
to get to where I want to go?
No. Because what will happen is you'll get to where you want to go, and then if you still need to work, which I'm presuming you do, yes?
Yes.
You'll get there, and everything will be great, right? We'll hear the cows in the distance. We'll smell them. We'll have all these great memories. Mom and Dad are there, all the things. But you're going to go from a job that you do love to a job you don't love, and that's going to weigh on you, even though you're close to family.
Right. And I wish that my current job could be remote, but it just doesn't work that way with what I do.
That's fine. So what kind of work do you want to do?
What kind of work do I want to do?
Yeah. Meaning, we want to go back home. I get it. So what do you want to do? This is a chance to reset or do something similar to what you're doing now. That becomes the new standard, not this job that's available that you're going to go,
right,
and pretty quickly you're going to be going through the motions. I just don't think you have to accept mediocrity.
I just don't feel like the jobs up there are coming open very often, and if they are, they're not really optimized. So the only way I'm finding out about them is through the proximity principle, boots on the ground, put my message out there and say, hey, if you hear anything, let me know.
Well, then maybe we need to go back and spend a few trips, take a couple vacation days, take some long weekends, get some boots on the ground.
So
what kind of work do you want to do?
Well, I'm too afraid to work for myself. So that's a long-term dream, maybe, that someday I'll get brave enough to do that. But in the meantime,
Stop. I am not going to let you roll through that. I care about you too much, and you know that.
Well,
What's the dream? What is it?
I think just recently I've realized that I would like to start my own business in food preparation and of preparing healthy meals for busy families that don't have time to do it themselves. So kind of like the HelloFresh, those kind of kit things for people, especially if they can utilize local farmer produce or even my own.
Why can't we try that, get it started on a very small side hustle level in this new smaller community where your parents probably know every freaking person on the planet at that town?
Well, because of the income stability or lack thereof.
No.
I don't want to move there without having the income.
No. I'm sorry. I didn't do a good job of giving you a scenario. I'm saying we find you a job that you really enjoy. That's the day job.
And that's what I'm looking for.
Then we start this on the side. I know, but I want to bring all this together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to settle just because you're afraid. I think you could get this little food preparation thing going on the side, and it could turn into something due to all the relationships you're going to inherit. Plus, it's home. That's all I wanted to say on that. So what are you doing now, and what would you want back in this area?
The things that I'm doing now are little technical things. I work in television, and I do the rinky-dink technical back-end things that the creatives aren't good at.
What does that mean?
So I'm sort of a facilitator.
Like lower thirds and what are you talking about?
I set up compliance for closed captioning and legal releases and rights and then access throughout the building and processes. So I'm like a things and processes kind of person.
So that's what I was getting at.
Mm-hmm.
So you are, I don't want to call it an office manager. I also don't want to call you a project manager, but you're somewhere in between there. You're administrative, process details,
purchase information.
And you enjoy that kind of work.
Purchasing.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, then this is all hands on deck. This is you changing the narrative in your head, which is, well, Ken, there's just not a lot of jobs that come up. I don't find out about them, blah, blah, blah. Wait a second. How many relatives do you guys have back in this town?
20.
How many friends do you have?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Back there, I mean, everybody kind of dispersed.
Okay. My point is 20 relatives times however many people they know, they want you to come back big time, I'm guessing. Yes or no?
Oh, yeah.
Well, guess what? You want us to come back? You want to see grandbaby? I need you to be my detectives on the ground, finding anything and everything that is related to this type of work. Send them a job description because you know what it is. Let them start looking for you. Go visit. Do some Zoom interviews. Figure it out. The proximity principle. You can do this. You have everything you need to get the right gig back there. So get after it. Don't take this current one unless, let me give you one exception. If that gets you there and it's stable and you won't be miserable, so you need to do more homework, I'm fine with you interviewing for it. Go all the way to the altar. Don't let them put the ring on your finger until you make sure that you won't be miserable. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right. That was my other thought, is an application isn't an interview, isn't
no,
a hire.
No, walk all the way down the aisle. Let them date you, everything. But here's the deal. I'm okay with you taking it if, there's two ifs, if you aren't going to be miserable in that culture and if you are committed to finding the right gig and you're not going to get all hung up and go, I got to stay here for 2 years because I'll feel guilty if I leave them within 6 months. That's my caveats.
Mm-hmm.
How's that feel?
I think I'm pretty okay with that. I see most any position kind of as a new challenge, so it would be at least fun for a little while to learn it.
But let me just say this. Those are caveats. It's not my, mm-hmm. it's not my recommendation. My recommendation is to be patient. Put your friends and family to work for you there on that end. Tell them exactly what you're looking for. Describe the work. Send them a couple of examples of the job descriptions, and they start talking. Hey, let me tell you about Morgan, my daughter. She's a rock star. Loves logistics, loves processes, very organized, got a lot of experience, could be a game changer. I just don't think you're aware of everything that's there, and the reason you're not aware is because you're not getting after it. So I'm challenging you, not criticizing you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Go do it. Find it. I'd be patient and wait for the right thing so that we're not making all kinds of transitions once we get there, but if you're just really wanting to get back there fast, I'm fine with it, but don't feel like you're an indentured servant and you got to wait for 6 years before he can leave them. That's the only challenge with my caveats. Yeah, a lot of people call and go, Ken, I feel so guilty about leaving. Why? You know, owe people your life. So you got to determine that. But I certainly understand the nature of the question and why you're doing it. So, you know, hang in there. Be patient is my preference. And I think the right thing will pop. I really do. I think it'll reveal itself. And then we move and do a good job, start our dream business on the side. Once we get stable, everybody's happy. Grandparents are happy. You're happy. We're all happy. Cows are happy. All of it. Don't move. More of your calls coming up. This is the Ken Coleman Show. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, helping you increase your income and your impact in this world through your work. You're enjoying work, you're enjoying life because you're on purpose, you're experiencing meaning, and oh, by the way, the money's going to be really nice as well. That's our goal here. That's what we do for you. I'm your coach. Let's go. 844-747-2577. Brisbane, Australia is where we go next. Sam is there. Sam, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Ken. Great to hear from you, man.
Great to hear from you, sir. Thank you for calling from the Down Under. Wow.
Yeah, no worries. All good.
Yeah,
I've been watching you for years now.
It's good to be
on the show.
Thank you. By the way, I wish I sounded like you. I got to tell you.
I'm actually
so cool.
I'm actually English.
Oh, you are? I thought it sounded a very little kind of itch. Where in England?
Near London. A place called Farnham. In the south, an hour south of London,
Okay, great. All right, how can I help?
I've tried many different things over the years, and I thought I found what direction to take my career in. But I guess I'm kind of struggling to find my lane. I was recently in a job which I thought was kind of a good fit for me, but they let me go after 2.5 weeks because they said I wasn't experienced enough. And it kind of knocked my confidence a bit, and now I'm in a position where I'm doubting if it is the right, I'm doubting if it was the right choice, and just feeling a little bit lost.
Do you agree that you didn't have enough experience to actually pull it off, or do you think they think they are making an excuse out of that? What do you think went wrong?
I think, to be honest, I was really clear on my resume, on the interview. I told them my experience. And I felt like I was actually doing a great job for the first 2 weeks. But it seemed like they wanted someone who could just come in and just not be trained at all and just do the role without any, just hit the ground running, basically. But I thought I was nailing the job, to be honest. But according to them, I wasn't experienced enough for them. They need someone who's been doing it 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
The thing is, I left my old job for this as well, and it just messed me around because I quit my job, went to this job, and then after 2 weeks, I'm gone.
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about the emotional side of this. This sucks. There's just no other way around it, and it does knock your confidence, but I'm not seeing any real evidence. And you've got to be, I mean, I can only go off of what you're telling me, but based on what you've told me, it's not like you were dropping balls, you were blowing stuff up. You know, you were causing train wrecks to happen every day. Sounds to me like you needed a little more hands-on training to the parts that they were training you on, you were growing and you were getting better, right?
Yeah.
I just think
that's what I thought.
Well, here's the deal. I think this is poor leadership. And first of all, I understand why you're feeling a lack of confidence, but I don't want you to continue to feel that because I don't think there's any evidence that says you can't do that job. Because what I'm hearing is, had they stuck with you a little bit longer and trained you, been a little bit patient, because they don't want to spend time training you, they want to go do whatever they're doing. And and you were honest in your resume, you were honest in the interview, and I think what I want you to do is not be confused by this, because this is a confusing situation. But wait a second, what do we know? You do love the work, enjoyed the work. It's still something that, had they not done that to you, you wouldn't be calling me with any confusion, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I was enjoying the job. For years, I probably had two jobs in my life which I actually really enjoyed, and this was one of them.
Okay, then. So hold on to that.
Yeah, I guess.
Hold on to that.
Yeah, give it more time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait a second. Let's look for that. So here's what we do. We look for that. We look for similar work. We look for a little bit better culture. And then here's what we explain. We go, hey, they brought me in. I told them what my experience level was. And they still hired me anyway. And they were like, man, this is just going to take more training. And we're not in that position. You're just going to have to own this. Okay. Or you were only there 2 weeks. You don't even put it on your resume.
Yeah, that's probably what I'll do, to be honest.
I mean, that's not lying. It's just everybody doesn't need the whole truth. And so I think you get your head up. I think you need to heal and realize, wait a second, I'm not a doofus. I really enjoyed this work. This just wasn't the right place for me. And let's take it as a sign. Let's take it as a nudge into the right direction for your future. Get your head up, man. Keep moving forward. I'm proud of you. Thank you for the call. Coming up, more of The Ken Coleman Show. Ken Coleman Show continues to help you find work, that matters to you so you can make more money and experience more meaning. Thank you so much for joining us. 844-747-2577. Let's go to Matt in Beloit, Wisconsin. I've never been to Beloit, but I will tell you, it is now one of my top 10 favorite cities in America to say. It's up there in the top 10 with Sheboygan. It still remains all time number one, without question. But Beloit, I like that. Beloit, I like saying that. There you go. All right, Matt, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Ken. Thanks so much for having me. I'm loving your show.
Thank you, sir. How can I help?
My question is how do I start fresh in a new job after leaving a pretty bad workplace?
Well, I'm going to give you the high-level answer, then we'll unpack it. How about that? High-level answer is, how do I start fresh after I've left a toxic job? Well, number one, you need to heal. Number two, after you've had a chance to heal, I mean, the real pain, man, real stuff, the hurt, whatever happened, and we'll get into that. First thing we want to do is heal. That's step one. Step two is we want to learn. Now that we are healthy enough to have true perspective, let's look back on it and go, what can I learn from this so that I don't ever put myself in this position again? How do I see this in other places? And after we learn, then I want you to make sure that you're clear. This is into my seven stages now. Get clear and on where you want to go, why you want to go. And you've healed, you've learned, and so now you don't drag that with you. And you truly do choose to start fresh. And you go, you know what? Nobody ever likes suck. Nobody ever likes pain. Nobody ever likes experiencing toxicity. But there is something to learn from it, which will then make you stronger and better. So that's my high-level answer. So what happened?
I love it. Thank you, Ken. So I started at this place where I currently work, and I'm leaving shortly 3 years ago. With some friends recommending it, said it was great, got in here. And leadership seemed very passionate and kind, but everything just always seemed a little bit off. Pretty soon with the start of COVID, my coworkers got fired for what later came out to be unjustified reasons. And then eventually the executive director here of 30 years was walked out. And so it was pretty evident that she was doing some pretty sketchy stuff. And, you know, her family was all hired in and they were all getting raises and became like a very, you know, ran by this one person and their whole family. And a lot of toxic leadership as far as, you know, people getting rewarded for keeping their mouth shut or brown nosing. And I just got a new boss 2 weeks ago who was fantastic. I was very excited, and then I got an opportunity to go make more money doing the same thing somewhere else. So I decided to take it, and but I just want to, you know, take off the baggage of this old stuff, of this bad leadership.
Yeah.
Like you said, learn how to never have this happen again.
Yeah.
And go into this new leading a new team. I was a department leader without having that old stuff on me.
Yeah, you know, I think you have to say, what are the signs? What could I have done to dig into those signs to confirm that they were in fact red flags? I think that's a big learning based on what you just told me. I think that's a big takeaway. Something seemed off. And so I think one lesson is you got to trust yourself. Because you were right. You were right. And so dig. When something's off, dig. Don't ignore it. Don't dismiss it. Dig. There's your big thing. When something feels off, don't dismiss, dig. Oh, I love good alliteration when it presents itself. Okay. I think that's a biggie. Is there another one that now that I've kind of given you an example, what's another lesson?
I just think I agree with you on noticing what the signs are and following my gut on this, that when something feels off to kind of not sit back, but dig in and work with other folks and kind of figure out what's going on. And I just learned so much on what leadership is and isn't in these last 2 years. So I feel excited to start fresh.
Bingo. That's what I was hoping you were going to say, You have at least one or two really glaring examples of what poor leadership is. And so you get a little bit of a head start and a life hack to go, all right, I know that if I don't do these two things, I'm not going to be a horrible leader. You know, and what's the converse to the horrible stuff? What's the positive?
Yeah, I definitely when I was feeling low, I definitely felt myself slipping into their bad leadership styles, and then realizing what I was doing to my team when doing it, and then just had to shake myself loose and say, don't do that. Like, you got to be better than that for them.
Yep. Let me go ahead.
I was just going to ask if I could ask a part two, if they had a second.
Yeah, go for it.
So, well, I was kind of looking for a new job. I did your Get Clear assessment.
Uh-huh.
And just, I'm also wondering how to kind of apply that into my new position. So I've been in leadership for the last year, leading a department in a nonprofit world, working with homeless veterans. Mm-hmm. My new place is going to be doing job assistance for another nonprofit.
Uh-huh.
I like leadership, but it's not necessarily more my gut clear. It's not necessarily always my exact strengths. So
what were your top talents?
Logic, inspection, and discernment.
Okay.
And passions of research, making, and solving. So I really like kind of figuring problems out, you know, tinkering with things, making new stuff to solve problems. And I think I do leadership pretty well.
What kind of problems do you most love to solve? Are they people problems? I'm going to give you your answer key. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is a multiple choice. You can circle more than one. People problems, process problems, idea problems, or thing problems, like things.
Process is definitely up there for sure. My mission from you was efficiency, and I love trying to make things make more sense, make more efficiency.
Okay. So does a leader who has the talent of logic, which is a really good thinker, you're analytical, who is very detail oriented, inspection, you're kind of a natural critic. You've also got a great people skill of discernment. What were your top three passions? That's what you do best, what we just said. What do you love to do most, you said?
Researching, making, and solving.
Okay, so researching, that's digging in. Okay. Mm-hmm. Researching is certainly a cousin to logic, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Research is certainly a cousin to inspection, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. This is great. If you read that again, you go, what a good leader... Could a person be a good leader with those talents and that passion? What's the answer?
Absolutely.
Of course. You don't have to have, you have to score high in leadership or influence. You don't have to score high to be a leader. This assessment reveals your unique makeup, your unique cocktail. Everybody's a different cocktail drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
What it's telling you is that's where you need to spend your time as a leader. You look at your passion line, and if you're not spending 75% of your day doing that type of work as a leader, you will not be in your sweet spot.
Yeah.
So, same thing with talent. If you're not spending 75% of your day analyzing that, using that logical head of yours, inspecting processes, systems, if you're not then discerning who's winning in this process or what part of this process is broken, if you're not spending 75% of your day doing that work you love, that you're good at, you're not in your sweet spot. So this is now a leadership job description for you, meaning leadership is leadership, helping people win. But that's how you do it. You understand?
That makes sense.
My man. Folks, that's why the Get Clear assessment is so, I'm proud of it. Not because of arrogance or pride. That right there, that's how you spend 75% of your day. You do that, guess what? Not only do you experience tremendous meaning, you are going to be really freaking good at it. And oh, by the way, here come the dollar signs. They will promote you up the ladder. You want to make a great impact as a leader? Spend 75% of your day leading the way you're supposed to lead. There it is. All right, to our listening audience, I got to get out of here. You matter. You have what it takes. To our viewing audience, hang on. We got a bonus segment coming up. Press on.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following at Ken Coleman.
If you enjoy this podcast, you should check out other great podcasts from the Ramsey Network, like Ramsey Everyday Millionaires.
Ordinary people built extraordinary wealth, and you can too. On Everyday Millionaires, you'll learn how millionaires live on less than they make, avoid debt, invest, and are disciplined and responsible. Listen to Everyday Millionaires wherever you listen to podcasts.